Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Right, hello everyone, and welcome to Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host, Chris Platy. Hope everyone is doing well out there. For this very special episode, I got my go-to Lakers expert, my go-to guy, and that is Tim, aka Cranches McBasketball of the Basketball Index. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. It's been a busy time of year. Lots of Laker news. I've probably for the first time in my life contemplated rooting for a different team. It's a good time to be alive. Good NBA time. Not a great time to be a Laker fan. And I'm guessing that's why I'm here. So
yeah,
there's a lot to talk about. A lot has happened since we last spoke. A lot has happened in the past like 7 days. So it's. Man, it's frustrating. We'll see. Hopefully, the Lakers won the lottery. Yay! And you can, if they win the lottery tonight, you can throw that in there.
Yeah.
But if they don't win the lottery, today's going to be not a great week for the franchise.
Yeah, not a great week at all, Tim. Like you said, man, so much has happened. I remember the last time I had you on the podcast, I said we were talking about if Anthony Davis was going to be a Laker, which feels like seasons ago.
Yeah, man. And now just in the last day or two, I've seen reports saying that the Lakers are going to do an all-out push for Anthony Davis. I've seen other reports saying that they're not going to trade any of the young guys. And those two things don't make sense together unless they're planning on trading LeBron for Anthony Davis. So there's just all kinds of nonsense happening. Nothing the team does makes any sense. I spend hours and hours researching coaches and putting together these recommendations. I wrote this whole big long thing about how you should conduct a coaching search, and I'm pretty sure they did zero of those like 20 things I listed. I wrote here 32 coaches the Lakers could go after, and they picked some. The only people they went after were ones in like my tiers of Tim wouldn't be happy or Tim would be big mad. So it's ridiculous. I need to just start promoting poor decisions because I think that'll reverse the trend and get them doing things that work out.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Maybe go at this point. Go for it. Nothing's too crazy to try. Let's start with the Lakers had the disappointing season. Obviously, 37-45, missing the playoffs, finishing 10th in the West, and then the last day of the season, Magic Johnson steps down out of nowhere. Like it's been so long since we've talked to him that we haven't even talked about this. So let's just start there. Just how surprised were you when that actually happened?
I was very, very surprised, and I was very pleasantly surprised. The fact that they had so many possible excuses to roll with for this year, with the different injuries and a big new roster, first time with LeBron. LeBron was injured. Lonzo was injured. Ingram was injured. They could have given this some more time, fired Luke Walton, kept moving on. And Magic, with the stature he has within the Lakers, not just the organization, but the Laker world, they would have given him plenty more years if he wanted them. Yeah. And the fact that he opted out of that and the reasons he seemed to be giving were just like, man, this isn't fun. I want to be able to go tweet very generic tweets like, oh, man, the Warriors won today. Steph Curry is very good. I hope they win again. Like really, really dumb stuff. I don't know. It was bizarre, but I'll take it. I feel like it was very unlikely to have happened, and I'm very pleased that it did happen. I'm not a big fan of Magic's basketball takes. I mean, he's a hero of mine. I mean, Michigan State and the Lakers all in one person. I met him in person one time, and it was just a different aura. And like, I've been around players, I've been around coaches. Being in the room with Magic Johnson is something different. I'm really glad that he's no longer somebody I'm not very happy with, and he can just go back to being that former player, you know, overcoming the adversity he's overcome in his life. But it was just not working out. And I think Laker fans everywhere should be breathing a sigh of relief, or at the time they should have been breathing a sigh of relief. We've got quite a timeline between that day and today, so maybe not so happy today, but at that time it seemed like it would be a move in the right direction. Hopefully replace him with somebody who has some sort of real experience, real knowledge, and getting somebody out of there who probably could have stayed for years, wasted all of LeBron's years with the Lakers, and left the franchise in not such a great place.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you say that about the cachet of Magic. Like you said, Magic is one of those people that he in Laker world, he exists with anonymity, right? He can do pretty much no wrong. He would have several attempts, and clearly it wasn't really working out that well. I mean, I always thought that he didn't necessarily need to be on the Lakers payroll. He could just be the guy who shows up for meetings and tries to recruit star players like he supposedly wants to do. And maybe, you know, after time healing the wound of just the abrupt exit, maybe that's something he could step back into. And, you know, that was kind of the only thing that I semi-bought with Magic. But yeah, as far as his basketball decisions go and his basketball takes, I was not a big fan of Magic and his moves. What did you think about the idea of, you know, of keeping Pelinka and then Kurt Rambis kind of gaining power in the front? I mean, that's what we're kind of hearing now, is Kurt Rambis is gaining front office power, and, you know, and just Pelinka is there too as well still. Like, what did you think of how they handled the front office perspective before we get into the whole coaching?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And the subsequent moves after Magic left were, Pelinka stayed. We were hoping he'd be gone, but he stayed around. And I think Jeannie, in her world and the way she runs the team, she has a pretty small circle of people that she really trusts. And Rob Pelinka is one of them. Kobe Bryant's one of them. Linda Rambis, who's a name that has gotten more attention recently, but has been a name that has been around the franchise and advising in a pretty silent role for years. So Linda Rambis, what she's done, it hasn't been anything new. She's continued to influence the way that Jeannie Buss looks at the team. But like you said, Kurt Rambis coming into the picture is, I don't know, at the very highest of levels, it looks wrong on so many levels. You've got a nepotism in several ways. You've got former player, and we know that they like to bring back people who used to have a job on the team in some capacity and put them in a completely different job they're not qualified for. So there's that going on. The fact that he's married to the woman who's been advising Jeannie for years does not look good at all. A power vacuum was created when Magic left, and with Pelinka staying, Kurt Rambis definitely has filled that void. I would say he's essentially the director of basketball operations at this point. I don't know exactly what the day-to-day work looks like. I think you hit the nail on the head with Magic. He's a guy that the big pro with him was his aura on, you know, current players and recruiting future players. And that's something that he can still do now without being cut any checks. And it gives him the freedom to tweet whatever he wants and meet with athletes and help them out and really pursue things he's more interested in. Because honestly, I don't think he was interested in that day-to-day work.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he really knew what he was getting into when he took on the job. And actually, I mean, he had been around a little bit before being officially named the president of basketball operations. So he should have known a little bit more of what he was getting himself into. From what I've heard, loosely sourced from different people I trust in my DMs, he really wasn't around all that much. There would go like weeks at a time where he just wouldn't be there. So it was very, very evident that he was not all that interested in the day to day. So with him out, Rambis doing that work, that's again somebody I'm not confident in. Don't really like his tenure, other than being a player, hasn't been good, you know, as a coach. And it's, I don't know, it was another opportunity for a franchise that has tons of money, no salary cap for front office positions or coaching positions, picking somebody that they know from their small circle of people instead of opening up the position to the whole league and likely being able to get people from well-known names from other teams to jump ship and come join the Lakers. And they blew that opportunity the same way they've blown that opportunity multiple times in the past. And again, just brought somebody back from already in the family. It's bad process. It may work out. It hasn't looked like it's worked out so far. And I'm sure we'll get to that in like 30 seconds, but it just does not look good. And it doesn't make me feel good about the future. It's not just that, you know, they messed up, but, you know, I think they're all right. They'll figure it out. They've messed up. I don't think they deserve to be there. They've given us no indication that they're competent in any way. And his involvement with, I mean, obviously his wife has been a big part of this franchise through that silent consulting role. So I'm assuming he's not really bringing in a new diverse perspective. It's probably a lot of the same sort of thinking. And we've seen that play out with what's happened since he came on.
Yeah, very, very true. You know, I one thing I do want to shift, I do want to do before we shift to the coaching part of it is just the whole front office, because remember there was the rumors right away like, oh, you know, they should. And it wasn't really from the Lakers. It was always from outsiders just being like, you're the Lakers. Why don't you go for Jacob, you know, the Golden State Warriors and, you know, go for all these big execs. Maybe see if Daryl Morey would consider leaving, if Masai Ujiri would consider leaving, something like that. And the Lakers seem to have not done that. So do you think that the kind of front office they have, because I was always expecting some type of hire, whereas now we're just kind of getting reports like, oh, this person is kind of appearing within the organization. There's no real kind of, like you said, confirmed titles or anything at the moment. Do you think that the front office Lakers has now is the one that they're going to stay with? Or do you think that they're still kind of fleshing out the front office?
In terms of the major players, I think they're about set at this point. Mm-hmm. They're going to fill the Magic Johnson void with Kurt Rambis. They still have their GM. He's not going anywhere. They have the same owner. Linda Randis is still doing what she's been doing for years. So in terms of the major key players, we subbed one out and put one back in. So I think at this point in time, they're satisfied with that. And, you know, we've heard a lot of, like you said, external people saying, you know, they could go get Lacob or Ujiri or these different people. They could pursue some help, and they haven't, and I really don't think they will. There are a lot of brilliant owners in the NBA who are able to purchase, you know, teams that cost billions of dollars because they've been incredibly successful with their businesses, and they've been cutthroat in competitive environments and made all kinds of smart decisions. There are some who haven't really done that as much, and I don't really want to talk about that today, but there are some teams that may be selling in the near future. We'll see how things go. And then there are some like the Lakers who they inherited the team from their dad. And Jeannie Buss's qualification is her dad was the owner of the team. And now she is the owner of the team. And I mean, their whole ownership group, but she's in charge right now. So this isn't somebody who has really worked their way up to the top. This isn't a coach who fought through the ranks in high school and in college all the way up to the NBA. And we're questioning their abilities. This is somebody who skipped the whole line, was pretty much born into this. And I mean, you can look at different monarchies throughout history, and there will be times where, you know, it's a luck of the draw thing with how good your kid can be at running a kingdom or a franchise. We're seeing what that's looking like right now when they're not understanding or embracing the fact that there are things that they don't know. And they need to go out and find people who are the best at what they do. Perhaps they don't individually know them, personally know them, but you have to be able to trust really brilliant people that you can pay a lot of money who have been successful everywhere else to come help you out. And they just haven't been able to extend that trust beyond anyone they know already.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it with Jeannie Buss. I think that perfectly sums up her 10 years that she has, her circle that she trusts, and she has all the resources in the world to kind of go out there and get anybody, but she's choosing the people that she trusts. And you talk about just growing up in the Laker culture. One of the things that Zach Lowe has said that's really interesting is, you know, he's talking about how he's interviewed Jeannie Buss and he likes Jeannie Buss as a person, but he's talked about how she has such a strong, I guess you could say, blind eye for the Lakers organization and players and just ex-employees and all that, which is all the stuff we've been talking about. Like, he had this, he said he had this one quote where it was Kobe in year either, I think it was his second to last year. And he just ran into her and he was talking to her about, you know, oh, you know, it's about training camp time. You know, what do you think of the Lakers this year? And she's like, well, as long as we have Kobe, we're always contenders. And this was like after, I think this was after he blew his Achilles or the year he did blow his Achilles. One of those 2 years, so the very, very twilight of Kobe's career, and yet, you know, and yet she's still looking at this Lakers as contenders. And he said that's been kind of a line from her that has always stuck with him when he thinks of her and her kind of decisions, you know?
Yeah, that's neat. I don't think I'd heard that before, but that sounds about right. I mean, Jeannie is a very good people person.
Yeah.
And you will be hard-pressed to find people who don't like Jeannie, who have worked with her. She is well-liked by the other people she works with, former people she works with. But, I mean, just as that story is alluding to, she doesn't really know the basketball side as well. And she's in a position where this organization that she's running, that she loves so much, has been such a big part of her life, her family's life, her late father's life. She wants it to succeed and she wants to give it all she can. And I think that is manifested by her not knowing the basketball side, but deciding that she's only going to trust this thing that means so much to her with people that have been part of that life already. And she has developed a really strong relationship with. So that's why we see Rob Pelinka being able to make all these basketball decisions. He's the basketball guy. And yeah, he's a former agent. We've heard stories about how other executives don't like working with him. They'll call Jeannie instead. They would call Magic instead. They'll call the other Buss siblings instead. He's not a good person for his role. He wasn't qualified when he went into the role. And I mean, I've seen people make arguments that he's in the role because of a favor for Kobe or just the fact of he had that association with somebody that Jeannie holds so dear.
Right.
It's people putting people in positions who they trust, but really probably shouldn't be there. And as somebody who a big part of my job is interviewing, hiring people, trying to put people in the right positions to succeed and doing it at the executive level, it's so blatantly obvious how poor this organization is at handling executive recruitment and selection. And it's so impactful. If they were a regular business, they probably would have run it into the ground at this point. But even if your team can't compete, and they have the worst record over, what is it, the past 4 or 5 seasons, they're tied with the Knicks for the worst record, it doesn't matter. They're still making money. So until things change at the top, and there are no signs that that will happen, this may very well continue, and we'll see bad decision after bad decision, and we just need to luck into some good things happening as Laker fans.
All right. On a lighter note, you guys got a coach now.
We do, yes. Yes. We got the headliner from the article that I wrote about all the different coaching options. Broke it down, you know, it's like 11,000 words. And the Lakers picked the guy who headlined the Krangis wouldn't be happy category. So, I mean, I think that sums it up pretty well. But we got Frank Vogel. Oh, we skipped Ty Lue.
Yeah, what happened there? And that's what I wanted to get to before Frank Vogel. Real quickly, what the hell happened? Because I honestly, I've heard so many things. What have you heard that happened with Ty Lue and how that fell apart?
So I would put it like this. Ty Lue really wanted to be the Lakers coach. They wanted him to be their coach. We've heard different reports about if, you know, some of the people within the organization, I think at this point it's become clear that the Rambi, as they call them, the two Rambuses, they were more in favor of Monty Williams than Ty Lue. And there were people within the organization thinking, all right, well, if we wait for Monty to be signed first, then we can go get Lue and it won't look as much like LeBron's running the team. That was something reported. I don't know if that's fact or not, but that was something. They did want to offer Ty Lue the spot. They chose Ty Lue. They went to negotiate with him. They mandated that he put Frank Vogel on his staff as the associate head coach, presumably running the defense, which I would be perfectly comfortable with. Ty Lue seemed okay with. They wanted Jason Kidd on the staff, who we can talk about in a little bit. Not a great person, not a good basketball person, not somebody you would want forced on your staff, not somebody who has the background professionally or personally that you would want standing a couple feet behind you with a knife in his hand. and Ty Lue was willing to allow that to happen, to take this job. And then the franchise offered him a 3-year deal. And it's standard practice now in the NBA to offer 5 years. Coach after coach gets 5 years. John Beilein just got 5 years like yesterday. So for a coach who has won a championship, has been to the finals as many times as he has, I mean, I don't think he's a great coach. He's a good coach. He has the pedigree of a great coach, and he certainly felt he was entitled. I don't want to say entitled because that I don't want to paint Lue in a bad light. I think he was certainly entitled to getting 5 years because that's the standard. That's the norm.
Yeah.
So that was really the final straw. I'm surprised some of the other things weren't the reasons why he said no, but he was cool with Vogel. He was cool with Jason Kidd. Cool maybe not be the right word. He was tolerant of those decisions. But it was the 3-year thing that really caused him to not take the job. And we have to consider he's probably among all of the available retread coaches, he's probably up at the top of that list for, you know, if Brett Brown were to get fired, and he's not going to be. But if somebody were to get fired and an opening were to arise, Lue would be on a short list. So It's not like he needed the job. He's also still currently getting paid by Cleveland. So again, he doesn't need the job. So the Lakers really, really botched it. They approached it as if they had all the leverage because there were no other openings or no other openings they thought he would be considered for. And that just was not the case. So this is a Rob Pelinka screwed it up, doesn't know how to do the job because he hasn't done the job before. And everybody he's working with also hasn't been in their positions before. So it's rough. That's a layup right there that they missed.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of speaks to the power when you explained it to me, that kind of speaks to the power dynamic that we talked about with the whole front office, right? About how there's this power vacuum and everybody wants control. It seems like they're like, okay, we want Ty Lue, but we don't want the world to think that this is a LeBron decision. We want it to think it's our decision. So therefore, you have to have this person, that person on your staff. And like, they started to control all the things, and we'll give you a 3-year deal instead of a 5-year. And, you know, right. That's kind of what you're getting at, right? That it was along the lines of like the Lakers trying to flex muscle or power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And I don't know if the 3 or 5 years had to do with LeBron at all. The Lakers, I mean, that 3-year timeline would line up pretty well with how long the Lakers would have LeBron.
Right.
But honestly, 2 extra years, I mean, they could still fire him at any point if they really needed to. It was really maybe, what, a $10 million, $8 million difference overall. Mm-hmm. So going from that to having to hire somebody who you initially thought was only worthy of being an assistant coach, he wasn't even part of your head coach search, is a huge drop off. So I just don't think they considered the risks and implications of how they were approaching the situation. And that seems to be a trend. They'll find a player, or they'll find a coach, or they'll find a concept that they'll hang on to and say, oh, well, you know, we want to get playmakers, and that's good. But they don't consider all of the other things about the players. They'll focus in on one aspect and not consider the other risks and implications. And I think that's what happened here. And man, it's the decision makers are not in good places. I would feel much more comfortable, honestly, if Magic had stuck around and Pelinka were replaced by a Joe Lacob or somebody who could run those day-to-day things very, very well and be able to stand up to Magic just a little bit, and then have Magic try to be that recruiter and maybe be part of some of the bigger picture things. But right now, we replaced the bigger picture guy with Kurt Rambis, and we're fumbling the ball on really, really easy layups and simple things like that. So things don't bode well for the Lakers. I'm not trying to say that I want Magic back. But yeah, if at least one of those two positions were filled with somebody competent, I'd feel much, much better about the franchise.
Very true. So we end up with Frank Vogel now. And Frank Vogel, who was originally, like you said, looked at as an assistant to Ty Lue. Kidd also seemed like he was supposed to be an assistant to Ty Lue. And then now he's an assistant to Frank Vogel. So there's a strong Kidd affinity. Like you said, Vogel signed the 3-year contract that Lue did not. And, you know, this is just so messy to me, man, because it seems like I've liked Frank Vogel as a coach. Like, I liked him when he was in his Indiana days. I thought, wow, this guy's good. But over the last couple of years, I've seemed to say, like, okay, like, he's a good defensive coach. He's a poor offensive coach. You know, I think he's a guy who, like you said, could be a defensive guru type, like Tom Thibodeau was for the Boston Celtics in the 2000s with Doc Rivers, right? Like some role like that. I think I don't have him as a head coach caliber, coach anymore. Like, I see him, I mean, just look at his last two stops, right? He left Indiana for Nate McMillan. They end up going to the playoffs and being better, even though they traded Paul George, their best player. Then he goes to Orlando, and he leaves Orlando, and they're in the playoffs first year with Steve Clifford. So he doesn't have a good track record of how he leaves things and where the teams go after that. And then the whole Kidd thing, man. Like, honestly, if I were to ask you in the 2020 trade deadline, is Vogel still the coach, or is Jason Kidd the coach? That's not a crazy question.
I think as of right now, I saw there were odds up, and I think it was -600 that Vogel was the coach, and +600 that Jason Kidd was the coach, and then I think +700 for Ty Lue, and +1100 for literally anybody else. If I had to rank those candidates, I'd say I'd put literally everybody else up first, and then probably Ty Lue, Frank Vogel, and then Jason Kidd is what I would hope would happen. What I think will happen is probably, I don't know, I think the odds for Kidd are higher than that would indicate. I don't know. The Lakers are going to be in a bad place if Jason Kidd is just trying to backstab Frank Vogel for 3 years straight. What I'm thinking is, his nonsense will, especially with this front office, either it's going to work and the Lakers are going to go through a rough patch at some point and Vogel's going to be gone and replaced by Kidd, or they're going to realize that this guy who's been a cancer for pretty much every organization he's ever played or coached for, he's fought with people, gotten people fired, led mutinies, stabbed people he's worked with in the back, tried to make power plays. And that's just the professional side. On his personal side, he's got a criminal history as well. Either it's going to work for him, or I think they're going to figure it out and he's going to be fired in the first year. Those are the two most likely scenarios in my mind, because I don't see how somebody like that, if he really is going to be pursuing that head coach job constantly, that's going to come out. It's going to be pretty obvious.
Especially in L.A.
Exactly.
With all that media, there's no way that whole thing stays under wraps.
Precisely. And even if he isn't, that's probably going to be some of the media too. Right. So this will be a story one way or the other. If somehow he has gotten it together and he's really cleaned up his act, then I guess he's not a huge risk, but he's also somebody who I don't think brings a whole lot to the table as a coach. Schematically, there's nothing I would be proud of. From a player development standpoint, a lot, pretty much every Milwaukee Bucks fan or analyst that you can talk to will talk about how all the poor decisions he's made to try to stunt people's growth and telling Giannis to stop shooting threes and all kinds of different things. The player development data that we have at my site indicates that he is a decent offensive player development coach in specific areas, and the way I would read that is his staff was good at those things. One person doesn't, like, you can't take the person supervising a team of people and assume that they'll be able to replicate the same results. He may have been supervising that team of player development coaches, but those player development coaches were the ones that every day were coming up with the plans and executing those with players. So I don't know if attributing all of the highlights of that directly to one person, especially somebody who wasn't really acting it out, is smart. So I don't see the upside with Kidd. The downside is very clear. In the best case scenarios are he goes after a mutiny and is kicked out of town, or somehow he's just completely changed from the person we know him to be.
Neither one sounds like likely scenarios at this point.
It's going to be rough. That's going to be an ongoing story for months and months and months.
On top of the whole just stories that LeBron brings, having LeBron James, man, this is really, you know, I got the Lakers were a mess with Magic, Pelinka, you know, all of that. But I mean, honestly, it seems like I thought it was exaggerated to a sense because it's the Lakers. I did not think it was this chaotic, but now this offseason has proved that it is totally chaotic, man. Like, I have no clue what they're going to do come this offseason and what this team is going to look like and how everything's going to function within this Lakers organization. Like, honestly, do you think that LeBron James looks at the Lakers in this time next summer and says, I can't do this. I can't spend my twilight years here with something this dysfunctional. Like, I went to Cleveland, for crying out loud, and I dealt with plenty of dysfunction there, but this is a whole nother level. Like, what do you think about that?
I would think that, I don't know, I don't see that happening. I think if he is unhappy, there will be other moves to take place before he demands a trade. And if he is leaning in that direction, he can go to Jeannie Buss and say, I want out. And she'll say, who do you want out instead?
And yeah,
he can probably get whoever he wants fired. True. Because if he leaves, this franchise is in really, really poor shape. They're in bad shape right now, but they have that icon. And if he leaves and, you know, like Kawhi comes to the Clippers or something, I would not be at all surprised if you have just truckloads of Laker fans deciding that they're going to be Clipper fans instead. I think that's a real possibility that could happen if they just, that would be the final straw, just complete dysfunction. Cause then at that point, you're not really hanging on to all that much for most casual fans. So I hope he doesn't ask for a trade. I don't think he will. I think we'll see other dominoes fall before that. And I think the fact that he came to the organization at a time he did, when realistically from a basketball standpoint, they weren't in that great of shape, says a little bit about his motivations in making that initial decision.
Right.
And it seems like there are strong indicators that, you know, Hollywood itself and LeBron on the business side was a big part of this as well. So as long as that's still there, I think that bodes well for the Lakers, but they just cannot keep making poor decisions and giving him opportunities seemingly every time they do anything to try to ask to get out of town.
All right, man. There you have it. The Lakers, the soap opera that continues. Let's real quickly, before you get out of here, man, let's do a little bit of a quick hit on each series. So we got Portland, Golden State, Milwaukee, Toronto. We'll start with whatever one's more interesting to you. Which one is more interesting to you?
I'd say the Eastern Conference final is more interesting. I think Toronto, Milwaukee, and actually, I mean, our models, I won't say I, but our models don't think either of the underdogs have a great chance. I think Toronto has a better chance than Portland does. I mean, obviously contingent upon how long Kevin Durant is out, but I'm really intrigued to see what Toronto can do and if they can put it together. Because on paper, they've got so many great pieces, and it's really depressing to think about because, I mean, they've got Kyle Lowry, Marcus Saul, Serge Ibaka, Kawhi Leonard, and they've got this great bench, and they've got Danny Green, and all of these players that are so much more, they're such a more complete team than anywhere close to where the Lakers are today. And they still may very well lose in five games to Milwaukee. And that is just scares the hell out of me because it just tells me how far away my team is.
Very, very true. But, you know, I got to push back on the bench because I'm with you. I thought it was totally complete. But, man, this playoff series has proved, no, it's not complete at all. Like this team is struggling. That bench is horrific for them. Marc Gasol has turned into kind of a shell of himself, especially offensively. You know, like all of the supporting cast, Fred VanVleet hasn't really had any moments outside of the Orlando series. So it's like OG Anunoby's hurt. By the way, is he supposed to come back this series?
I do not know. Let me Google it.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I heard that there was rumblings that he could be back sometime in the second round, and the fact that that went seven and he still didn't come back, I don't know if that was because his rehab got pushed back or if there was some type of or if it that was just a misdiagnosis from the jump. Mm-hmm. So that's
apparently
that's
he's a week away from ramping it up. Okay, what I'm seeing the most recent report.
He's looking at a game five, six, or seven if it goes that deep.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Okay. Cause he's a big player, especially in this series with Giannis. My thing with Toronto and Milwaukee is that Kawhi has to do so much for Toronto offensively, and obviously you're going to have to put him on Giannis as much as he can handle, but how much of the game can he actually spend on Giannis with while carrying the load that he's carrying? I don't think it's that much, right?
I'm interested to see how it plays out or how they try to approach it in game one, because like you're saying, I don't think anybody will be able to do what he's been doing offensively and then try to contain Giannis on defense for 48 minutes. I think they're going to push him to his absolute limit. And if he goes out there and gets in foul trouble, they're in big, big trouble. They're going to lose whatever game that is. So seeing how exactly the matchups play out will be interesting. I think Anunoby is an interesting X factor if he were to come back, because I am not a huge fan of like Serge Ibaka trying to guard Giannis.
They'll throw Pascal, I imagine, too. But Pascal, yeah. Serge, maybe even they'll try not to throw Mark, but Mark will probably get switched on him a couple times, and he'll try to just physical him. But
I still love those matchups for Milwaukee. It's Toronto's not in great shape, and maybe my perspective is different as somebody who's been looking at numbers throughout the whole year and really resetting my expectations as the season went along. But just like you're saying, Marc Gasol is not the Marc Gasol with the reputation of Marc Gasol. He is still a very good defender, both on the interior and then on the perimeter for big. He's a very good defender still. He is just an absolute shell of himself offensively. Yeah. And he's been like that all year. That's not a new thing.
He won't even shoot anymore or go on the block.
Yo, he's not trying to score, and that hurts them. When they have guys passing up open threes, it does not. It's such a tough thing for your offense. You work so hard to get open shots, and when those guys are passing them up, it's not good. And one thing I will say is Milwaukee has been known to be one of the teams that will be very purposeful about who they give up open shots to. So you may see some open threes, or you might see data floating around on Twitter. Oh well, Toronto had this many open threes, they just didn't make them, and that's because Milwaukee's allowing the right people to be open. If they do need to give something up, they're gonna let a bad shooter take a shot and make bad shooters beat them. So I'd be prepared to see that. Another guy I think is worth mentioning is Kyle Lowry, who in our data has just taken a huge drop off this season. Not just in the playoffs, but for the season as a whole, he just is not the same guy that he has been. The team's performing well. It's really easy to just point and say, oh, well, you know, Kawhi's over there, there are different people to take the shots, or he just doesn't have as much opportunity anymore. But in fact, his efficiency in a lot of different areas has dropped. His talent grades that we have at B-Ball Index have all taken a dip in a lot of different areas. And it's really coming out these playoffs when they have other guys who just can't score, and you need to be able to have Lowry go out there and pick up some of the slack. Kawhi can't do everything.
Yeah, he definitely can.
Yeah. So Lowry still has something left, but he's nowhere close to the offensive player he was last year. And that's hurt them. Gasol isn't a good offensive player anymore, and that's hurt them. It's really going to come down to Siakam and Kawhi to just carry a huge load. And those are probably the two guys defensively as well that are going to need to really, really lock down Giannis.
Yeah, or at least try. And a crazy thing that I've noticed, Giannis is only playing 31 minutes per game in the postseason.
That's wild. Know,
yeah, that's really wild how much they've been dominating, how little he's been playing. I mean, he can easily play. I mean, because he looks total. I mean, he seems totally in shape. Like, he can play a 40-plus minute game, right? Like,
probably. And they just, took a week off?
So yeah.
Milwaukee has to be fresh. Giannis in particular has to be so much more fresh than like Kawhi or Siakam or those other Toronto players are going into this series. So I don't know. I can easily see this going five games.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee's favor.
That's and where I'm at too.
If Lowry can't step up and be not just be, you know, it's not like he's been bad during the playoffs and we want him to be regular season Kyle Lowry. He needs to be last year Kyle Lowry or the year before that Kyle Lowry.
Right.
So I don't know how likely that is. Marcus Gasol probably isn't going to turn back the clock and suddenly become who he used to be. Fred VanVleet is a guy that's somebody where I think we may see some positive regression because he has severely underperformed what he was just during the regular season. So there may be some variance or unluckiness there. So that might be a boost that they should be expecting, hopefully. Who knows? Maybe he'll continue to play poorly and shoot poorly. But if they can get him to play well, Danny Green's going to have a huge series. I don't know.
Everything has to go right. I mean, the Bucks have dusted off George Hill, and somehow he's like a next level. He's averaging like 18 a game over the last couple games. Like, and they just dusted him off the bench. And Brogdon's back now. And he had a whole week to rest after playing. So I'm sure they've been practicing for a week, getting him back in the flow, you know, because that's, to me, always the biggest thing is a player is incorporating a rotation player back in the middle of the playoffs, just how that affects the flow of the team. And so this whole week is probably giving them plenty of time to kind of, okay, let me get that feel back for having Malcolm Brogdon, who I think is their second best player.
He's very, very good. I don't think people realize how good he is. I think people over the next week or two are going to figure that out. And like you're saying, hopefully they've had some time to get him back in the rhythm of things. And, you know, in between games, you're not really practicing all that much or no like real practice. But over the past week, I'm sure they've gotten some actual run in.
Right.
So I feel better about him coming back after them only playing a five game series than if they were playing just a couple days ago and they didn't have that time to acclimate him back into the group. So, yeah, Brett Brogdon is very good. Be on the lookout for that. Bledsoe is excellent. George Hill is very, very good at what he does. He's still an excellent perimeter defender. I don't know how to rank analytics staffs on different teams, but there are a lot of guys from Milwaukee that our data really, really likes. And I don't think that's by coincidence.
Not at all, man. Milwaukee is for real. I really can't wait to see what they do in the finals. Like, that's how excited I am, and that's how confident I am in them in this series with Toronto. And that's no disrespect. Toronto is a really good team. Like, they really are. But it just seems like their rotation and their, I mean, Kawhi, it seems like he looked around and his whole team got dusted by Thanos. Like, he's just watching Kyle Lowry and Marcus Gasol and all them become shells of themselves in real time and just fade away. It's ridiculous. Let's jump to Portland and Golden State. This is a series that they've met, I think, three times in the last 5 years, during the 5 year run, right? It's their third meeting. I believe
that could
this
be true.
Their,
I think both yeah, the other this times. Is their didn't third they get like meeting. Swept the other two times or lost?
One sweep, 1-5.
Okay.
So yeah, so this is their third time meeting in the 5 years. Portland's obviously never been better, but Golden State is Golden State. KD is out for game one, likely out for game two. He's going to be reevaluated Thursday, which I believe is the second game. So I don't know how they're reevaluating him through, whether it's through like an MRI or if they just kind of mean like a pregame checkup. I don't know where they're at in the evaluation stage for KD that game. But my guess is that he'll sit out the first two games, especially if Golden State wins game one, which I expect them to do. This has been an incredible season for Portland. I was dead wrong on them. I was one of the people that was like, I didn't think Portland was going to make the playoffs this year. I thought they were just totally defeated after last year, and Dame, CJ, that whole team proved me entirely wrong. Have played fantastic, and all credit to them. I'm really happy for them, but you know, I just don't see how they do anything against the Warriors. The one thing I'm excited to see is Zach Collins, because Zach Collins has been amazing.
Yeah, he's an exciting guy. He's somebody who, when he was drafted, you can see the potential. And if you watch his college tape, it's, you know, he's a very talented guy that can do a lot of different things. But it was so obvious that from a physical standpoint, he just was not prepared for the league yet. And he's taken some time. He's filled out a little bit. He's able to legitimately contribute to not just an NBA team, but an NBA team in the conference finals. So yeah, he's somebody that'll be fun to watch, an X factor there. We may see a lot of Dame and CJ just trying to roast Curry for 48 minutes. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because it's not just one guy who will be trying to get on Curry. You can't just, you know, flip your matchup and have Clay guard somebody else. Either of those two Portland guys can go off at any time. Both of them score a ton every game. So you can't really hide Curry against this team unless they decide to put him on like Mo Harkless or something like that. I don't know. It's another one that should be quick, should be five, maybe six. Depends on KD's health. But Portland's a fun team to root for. I was not expecting this from them, not this year. I was seriously considering them to be a team that maybe you should just try to blow it up. I mean, looking at this team a year or two ago, we were like, well, where do you go from here? They had a lot of money tied up. It didn't look like they were bringing in any great prospects. They had run the Dame and CJ thing back several times and hadn't really got much out of it. And even this postseason, after having Nurkic go down, I was not expecting them to do what they did. I mean, our models had, we were able to win some bets with them winning that last series. We felt good about them going into the series against, was it Denver they just beat?
Yeah, Denver.
Yeah. But we were not very bullish on them in this series.
Yeah, definitely not. And I just got an update as we're recording this. We're recording this right before the start of the draft lottery. And obviously tonight is game one. Rodney Hood is available for game one.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
So that helps, because he's been fantastic.
He's been very good. He's really disappointingly so for me, because he was one of the people on my he was one of the under the radar dudes on my Lakers free agent target list. So him just completely going off kind of blows that out of the water. But yeah, he's been excellent. I really like him. I think he's a good player.
I think so too, man. I think he's somebody who, if he's in the right environment, he's just a baller. He's streaky, but he's a baller, and you just got to give him a consistent opportunity. And I think with that, he's one of those players that you see around the league that just has to be comfortable in order to be great. Like they can't be one of those players that, you know, I go from backup point guard or backup shooting guard or whatever to not playing, you know, like in and out of the rotation.
You need to give him one of those guys. Yeah. And throughout his entire career, he's been a good defender, and he's been an elite one-on-one player. That's not a new thing. He's been good at that. Maybe elite's not the right word, but he's that is an asset of his, and we're seeing that play out on a playoff stage. And if he can shoot well like he's shooting this year, that's a very attractive player for teams. He'll be an unrestricted free agent this offseason, so keep an eye on him.
Pistons.
We'll see, dude.
We need all the shooting we can get, man, and all the ball handling we can get. So, Rodney Hood, Seth Curry, everything, all the everything, man, everything but a center.
It was cool to see the team make the playoffs, though. That impressed me. I was not expecting that, and it was a real shame that Blake Griffin was injured.
Man, I'll tell you what. I was at game three, and, dude, Blake Griffin had the most heart I've ever seen a player have in person. That leg brace, I don't know if you watched those games, but that leg brace was at least 15 pounds, and this man was still getting up in the air and doing Blake things. It was absolutely incredible, and then what made it so disappointing, because my best friend and I went to the game, and it was so disappointing that Andre Drummond, from the very first play, was mentally checked out. Something happened with him. Something happened. He got in foul trouble the whole game. He had, like, 5 points in the third quarter. Like, it was one of those disgusting Andre Drummond games. And, you know, he had really turned it around. You know, he seemed like he really kind of elevated to a level where he was consistent and dominating over the last stretch of the season. But then I don't know what happened with him, but he was just mentally checked out. And if he was there, I mean, the Pistons actually would have had a shot to get a game, and that would have been a cool thing. First playoff game in Detroit, that would have been a cool win. But that was tough to see.
That's disappointing. There have been a couple guys who, I don't know if disappeared is the right word, but they underperformed in the playoffs, and he was one of them. Clint Capella is one of them that I would say. He had a really good game or two in that last series, but he did not create the impact we were anticipating he would have. D'Angelo Russell is another one who,
yeah,
I mean, I think he's a little bit overhyped. He wouldn't have been an all-star if there weren't several injuries and Jimmy Butler
and in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, if you were in the West, it never would have happened. If Oladipo didn't get hurt, it wouldn't have happened. Didn't someone else get hurt? Wasn't there a second injury?
I think there was.
I can't remember who it is. Yeah, I think there were two injuries, right. And then also he was picked over Jimmy Butler, who definitely was just not picked. Yeah, he was a jerk. So this would have been like the third alternate for the All-Star list. Ended up getting it. I mean, good for him. I love him. I rooted for Brooklyn because of him in that first round. But he's at this point, I think that's kind of furthered the overrating of D'Angelo Russell as a player. He's very much exactly who he was with the Lakers. Same exact skill set. I don't think he's improved all that much. Just much higher volume, and there's a different aura around him and in the team, and it's much more positive. And it's good to see. But I'm sorry. I don't know how I took this on a Laker tangent again.
No, that brings this whole podcast full circle, man. So let's close with this. So I remember Bill Simmons and a ton of other people I respect the hell out of talking about D'Angelo Russell was the greatest Laker asset, and they traded him away. How did you feel about that? Because it seems like you're just kind of bullish, and it's really just D'Angelo needed a situation that was stable.
I really liked him as a player. As you know,
you think he'd be what he was in Brooklyn if, say, the Lakers had the culture the Nets had?
I think he is the same guy. I don't think he has really developed all that much. He was injured for a big part of last year, and I think that kind of stunted the opportunity for him to grow. So I don't think what we're seeing in Brooklyn is any different than what we would have seen if he stayed in LA. I think the culture thing, like you're talking about, I don't know if it's culture as much as he needed some people to really just get him in line. And Jared Dudley was one of those people, and perhaps the shock of being traded away helped in some way. But just like the stories that you would hear about D'Angelo Russell when he was a Laker player were just embarrassing, dumb stuff, like trying to get into nightclubs when he was underage and trying to go through the front door instead of going through the back door like all the other players. Just dumb things like that. And
He still had that dumb one with the Arizona iced tea. You heard about that, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. So
I guess you're right.
Maybe he's not too much different. You know, hiding some contraband inside of other contrabands was not a great strategy. So, I mean, I wish him the best. When he was with the Lakers, he was what, like 18, 19. So, I mean, you can't blame him all that much for doing some mostly harmless dumb stuff. It's not like he's abusing people or assaulting people. but
like someone on your coaching staff.
Yep. And someone who we just released from our coaching staff. So true. I wish him the best. I think if he didn't have the right people in his life, it wasn't going to turn around as much as it has. And even then, I think he still has a lot of room to grow. So we'll see where it goes. The Arizona iced tea thing doesn't have me feeling great about his, I don't know if maturity, maybe just like common sense. There are certain things that you can do and can't do and things that you can get away with. But just the stories you've heard of are him doing things he can't do and trying to get away with them in really dumb ways. So from that perspective, it doesn't seem like much has changed.
No, not much has changed at all. Well, I'm going to let you get going. The draft lottery is about a half an hour. I'm going to try and get this up ASAP. Hopefully it's up before the game. It'll be up probably sometime tonight for sure. But I'm going to be rooting for you, man. The Pistons aren't in the lottery for once, and not that we had lottery luck anyways. You know, it was so bad as a Pistons fan because every year they're like, who deserves to have the number one pick? And it was always Detroit. And yep. That's how you know it's just bad. But yeah. I'm rooting for you guys in LA, man, because if New York gets it, obviously that plays into Anthony Davis. That's the Eastern Conference thing. I don't want LeBron to not be in the playoffs anymore, dude. Get the Lakers the number one pick so they can get Anthony Davis.
Yeah, man. That'd be exciting. That'd be crazy. They have such a small chance of it happening.
It's what, 4%, nice. Right? It's,
I think so. It's something really, 4.4, really
well. Something like that.
And also, I mean, who are the teams we hear about getting the number one pick? We see in the media, oh, if they get it, they'll do this or that. Who are the teams that you think of?
What do you mean by like, who are the teams that if they get the number one pick that they move for Anthony Davis?
Either that or just, I mean, everything that I see is him with New York. Because they have the top odds, but I mean they're tied for the top odds, and they only have a 14% chance of getting him. Like there's just as good a chance he goes to Phoenix or Cleveland. Chicago's right there.
No, Atlanta, Cleveland. No, Washington. Cleveland.
Like I don't think fans are fully prepared mentally for the level of randomness that we're about to see with how low these odds are for each of the teams. This is the first year I believe that they really switched the odds around to try to de-incentivize the tanking, and there's a great chance that he ends up being a Washington Wizard or an Atlanta Hawk tonight. And I don't say great chance because they're like 10%, 9%, but there's almost as good of a chance of him ending up on one of those teams as the Knicks.
It's Knicks versus the field is 85%, right? Like,
seriously, 86%. Obviously we're not going to make predictions, but there's a really high chance that he ends up on a team that people aren't really talking about in that sort of way. And it would be exciting to see him with Trae Young. I mean, obviously I'm rooting for him to go to the Lakers. Him on the Wizards might help them.
Oh, they don't deserve
just
it.
Just turn the page. Yeah. I'm moving to D.C. in a couple
Washington
months,
so. And Cleveland don't deserve it. I'm just going to put that out there. Those are dumpster fires, man.
Cleveland's
those are dumpster
pretty
fires.
Lucky with these lotteries as well. They hit two number ones in a row, didn't they?
Yeah.
For Wiggins and then...
Anthony Bennett.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they don't... They blew that one, so they don't deserve another one.
They don't deserve another one for the rest of eternity.
Yeah. Phoenix and Atlanta, I don't have any... bad feelings about.
If Phoenix would just be weird because DeAndre Ayton.
Right? That'd be true. I would love to see. I mean, I wouldn't love to see. I would hate this, but if somehow the 76ers were able to get him, I don't even. What are their? I think they own somebody's pick.
They owe Sacramento's pick. So Sacramento goes to Boston if it's anything but one. But if it's one, it goes to Philly. So either way, it's not going to Sacramento. Yeah.
If Sacramento
has like the 13th, 13th in the lottery, something like that.
They are 14th. They're
14th in the lottery. Yeah.
Last place. Yeah.
But so they need the ultimate jump.
Exactly. But if it were to happen, and the Sixers were to get that pick, I would love to see what Zion and Ben Simmons on the floor at the same time looks like.
A train wreck.
It could easily be a train wreck. That's the thing. If not used the right way, it could easily be a train wreck. And Brett Brown has shown so little tactically in deploying Ben Simmons and making the most out of him based on his skill set, that two of him, or I mean, not, they're obviously not the same player, but two of that same sort of, not either a non-shooter or somebody we're not really feeling good about as a shooter, two of them on the floor, and then they've got Embiid too, so you can't just put like Zion at the five. And Embiid's not a good three-point shooter either, so that could be easily just be a really strange situation where they end up trying to trade somebody. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm excited. I'm giddy because we just don't know what's going to happen. It's not like, oh, well, there's a 50%.
And this has so much implications. Like, this is a franchise-altering prospect, a maybe even potentially NBA-altering prospect.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's like, this is huge ramifications, and it happens the first year that the lottery odds change. So everything is set. This is going to be something that we're going to look back at for the next decade, 15 years, as a pivotal moment, whatever happens tonight. So it's going to be very fun. Tim, thank you for coming on the podcast, man. I know you've been busy, you've been doing fantastic work at your site, Basketball Index, as well as other places. So thank you, Tim. I greatly appreciate it. I'll allow you to plug anything you need to plug before you get out of here.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you for having me on. I guess, yeah, go check out Basketball Index. It's if you just type in Krangis in Twitter, I'll pop up. And you can find my site there. B-Ball Index is where you can find all of my work. I usually don't write all that often, especially during the season, but recently I've been on a tear. I wrote a big, long piece about not just for the Lakers, but in general, what are kind of the best hiring practices if you're looking at replacing a coach or a front office person. I wrote a big, long breakdown on 32 different potential head coaches. One of the ones from my top tier, John Beilein, just got hired. Lou was on there. He almost got hired. We saw Vogel get hired. Kidd was all the way at the very bottom. But if you're a team in need of a coach at any point in the near future, you can look back to that and get some of my full thoughts. If you're a Laker fan, check out my Breaking Down Frank Vogel piece. I put that up just 2 days ago, and I probably went way too in-depth explaining all of the different things from like pace to the types of alignments, the types of plays he runs, which Laker players he best fits with, which ones he doesn't fit as well with, what his strengths are, his weaknesses, how he attacks switches, all kinds of stuff. So if you've got like 45 minutes to read an article, I'd check that out. And you know, follow me on Twitter again, Krangis McBasketball. If you type in Krangis, I'll pop up, or my handle is Tim spelled with a one. So it's T1M_MBA.
Yep. And I recommend totally following Tim because, man, you always throw up some, you're one of the few accounts that I really enjoy because you always throw up these random number breakdowns that you get from your site that are always just so timely. Like in the middle of a game, I'll see all of a sudden a breakdown on this player, and it's just so incredible, man. It always keeps me up to speed. So I greatly appreciate you. And I greatly appreciate your Laker expert, not just your Laker expert though, the entire NBA. You provide great knowledge for me, Tim. So I appreciate it, man. I'm a fan of what you do. Keep doing your thing, and we'll have to talk. You know, maybe we'll have to call back later tonight if the Lakers
after
win the draft
win the lottery, man.
Yeah, you gonna be drunk if the Lakers win the lottery?
Oh, we shall see. I mean, it is a Tuesday.
You should have champagne ready or something.
I do have champagne ready. And funny story. So Chris tried to have me on to podcast maybe a month or two ago.
It was about a month ago when the Magic thing happened.
Yeah, and I wasn't able to come on because I actually broke my other laptop because I spilled champagne on it. and so currently I have, I mean, right now, I hope the audio is good because right now we are doing FaceTime audio from my phone with headphones in. Because I have the only laptop I have right now is the Surface Go, and I can't set it up with any of my recording stuff. So there's my champagne plug, and yes, I do have like four bottles up in my wine rack, so I'm well prepared.
All right, man, well, best of luck to you. Since the Pistons are not in it, I'm rooted for you, buddy. Keep up the good work, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks, Chris.